Radio MD. RadioMD.com.
Get healthy. Be healthy. Stay healthy. It's the Power of Health with Dr. Jeffrey Burke.
You know, today we hear of the microbial overload and overloads on every part of our life, but obviously with food as well. What is this exactly, and how are we seeing this on a worldwide scale, Mark?
Well, Jeff, the microbial load that we encounter every day comes from, you know, various sources, but certainly the food supply is a very, very significant source. And depending upon the diet people eat, you know, that can vary from not a lot to a whole lot. The more raw foods that we consume, if we're consuming lots of raw foods, undercooked meats, even things like oysters, which we know have tens of millions of bacteria in a meal, you know, the loads we can be ingesting can range from hundreds of thousands to tens to hundreds of millions of bacteria in a single day.
You know, when we start ingesting these things into our body, I guess we have a level of saturation that, you know, obviously our body will consider to be normal. When do we break that threshold and we start to get into the red danger area?
Well, it's particularly a problem when we're talking about pathogenic organisms. We know that, and as Natasha said earlier, as little as 10 cells can cause a foodborne infection, and those kinds of infections can be related to viruses, which are particularly infective, and then organisms like this strange type of E. coli that's called E. coli 015787. That's another organism that can cause a severe infection at low levels. And then the spectrum moves up to things like Listeria. We typically have to ingest more of those to cause an infection, and they're quite unique in that that load will target specifically immunocompromised people, and particularly the fetus in the first trimester. And so, you know, that range of loads that we encounter will vary in severity for the type of person that's consuming it. So it constitutes a whole spectrum depending upon the health status of the individual.
You know, Natasha, how does our food choice play a role in this exposure? Obviously, we should be eating healthier, but, you know, how do we stay healthy within those healthy parameters?
Well, what I say to people is that you have to be very careful, even if you're buying organic fruits and vegetables and you're into this business of eating raw vegetables, raw fruits, raw fish, raw anything. As Mark so aptly said, it can present a bacterial load in the millions, not just the hundreds of thousands. And so it's like a tipping scale. And especially if you're taking any kind of medication to lower the acidity in your stomach, now you've got a double whammy. Not only are you increasing your load of bacteria, but the protective barrier that the stomach acid provides, along with facilitating better digestion, is gone, and so we're more apt to get an infection. And sometimes this food poisoning episode may come back later on in the years as a more serious autoimmune problem. So we have to be very careful, and I would say that in this day and age, and based on my 45 years of being in the probiotic industry, I would say you have to get a standardized, a good probiotic supplement on a daily basis that you take, and then take all the precautions and really think, rethink your need to eat foods raw, because you're now exposing yourself to far more bacteria than if you had some kind of a stir-fried food and vegetable, if you're not washing your organic vegetables and fruit, and especially if you're eating raw sushi. That presents a problem across the board, and I think you have to develop a strategy based on your personal needs and your habits not to be exposed to these food poisoning episodes. Because let me give you a stat that will bring you this attention close and personal, that each year Americans make about 51 million visits to physicians' offices and hospital emergency rooms for problems related to the digestive system. And I think that says it all.
You know, Mark, in this country, we hear about, on the news all the time, we hear about outbreaks and salmonella, and we hear about E. coli, we hear about food poisoning epidemics in restaurant chains, and it's becoming more and more common. My question is this a United States issue because of just what's going on here? Are we seeing it around the world? Are we seeing more of it here?
Well, I believe we tend to see more, Jeff, in the developed mm-hmm. countries like the U.S. And Europe and such, because our immune status is not as good as you might have, in developing countries. And I'm not saying that's necessarily a bad thing, because in countries where, people are getting infected a lot as young people, we know that many, many children die around the world, in the world from foodborne infections. And so it's almost like a natural selection. In the developing countries, we tend to see more people that just have a greater resistance because they've survived early childhood infections. In the United States, we've got a very complex food supply chain, and that is part of the problem. When things go wrong, it's difficult to trace the problem back to the particular source. And with these complex food supply chains, and the literal size of them is so large that when something does go wrong, when it trickles through the food system to the consumer, you know, we can see very, very large outbreaks. And in addition, I think another point to consider is that as more people are treated for, medical health conditions and such, and that's a good thing, but at the same time, we have more people in the population today that are immunocompromised. And because of an immunocompromised status, they're much more susceptible to low doses of bacteria, particularly those low-dose pathogens that we spoke of before, and they can suffer very, very severe side effects.
So let me ask you a question while we're talking about this issue. Is this more predominantly with younger people and maybe people older in the geriatric community, or is it across the board? Because what we've seen is at one time these old age diseases that we used to call only geriatric, obviously they've trickled down and people are now experiencing many of those health problems. Is the same issue with this situation of bacteria? Is it across the board, or are there sectors within the society that are more afflicted?
Well, great question. And if we look at the epidemiological data, it shows, where that particular spectrum of age is that's affected. Now, there's an organism that was discovered back in the late 1970s. This organism has been around for thousands of years, but it was identified in oysters. And people were noticing, the public health officials at CDC saw that there were about 50 people dying every year from eating oysters from the Gulf of Mexico. But specifically in people that were immunocompromised, and more particularly in people that had liver disease, because the liver is such an important filtering organ. When the portal vein that drains the blood from our intestines and takes those good nutrients out, some of those bacteria leak out. So they can cause systemic or bloodstream infections. So that spectrum of people, covers quite a few ages, from middle age onward. An organism like Listeria is now showing us another susceptible population. So it is the elderly, it's the very young, and it is also the fetus that suffers from these infections. And I'm sure as more pathogens emerge, we're going to see that they're targeting, different age and demographic characteristics in our population.
Natasha, is this lack of awareness of the microbiome and the status of bacteria in the environment in general, is it getting worse, or are we starting to give it kind of the same focus as we do things like GMO and organic terminology?
From my observation, no. I think people are totally ignorant of how pervasive bacteria are, and it needs to be brought up in the same level, if not greater, than the GMO issue. Because the bacteria can cause a whole lot more damage than consuming a GMO food. Not that I would ever recommend a GMO food, but people are totally, I think, as far as I'm concerned, and the thousands of people that I have addressed over the years on radio or through my books or through my television show, are totally unaware. And, food contamination problems have been in the news for at least 20 to 30 years. And it's somehow, the outbreaks come and people listen for a while. But then, I think the level of information that's given to people, they don't understand that, like we said today, you can consume from tens of thousands to hundreds of thousands to millions of bacteria, depending on how many raw foods you eat, and especially how many seafood items you eat raw. So that's something we have to start educating better on. and understanding. For instance, you know, we touched on Listeria, we touched on E. coli, but there's also Shigella, and there's also Salmonella. And by the way, C. difficile, which is not so prevalent in the food supply, but can be transferred in the hospitals and is in the community in almost every major city in the United States. And if you look at the latest stats, there's 453,000 cases per year in the U.S. of C. difficile infection. And two-thirds of the cases are linked to hospital or nursing home stays, and 29,000 deaths per year. One in five, 83,000 people have recurrence of illness, and 80% of deaths are in people 65 or older. So, you know, these are serious stats, and I think people have to become aware of it. And there's one bacteria we didn't even touch on, is Campylobacter. It's not that much in the news, but it is been cited in the supply of fast food chicken. And this bacteria can cause serious damage, including paralysis of the entire body. There's been, you know, few cases noted, but it certainly did draw my attention to it because I talked about Campylobacter 25 years ago, and people just don't listen. They're not interested. So I don't know how pervasive the danger is in Campylobacter. Maybe I'll ask Mark if he knows. But so far, I've mentioned like six or seven microbes that are in our food supply and can cause a daily damage to people who are ignorant and don't want to take the responsibility for making sure that, number one, they know what they're ingesting, and they're taking precautions to make sure that their microbiota composition is impacted positively by the proper consumption of probiotics, the proper consumption of food that they've taken care of, and engaging in exercise, and what I call most importantly, critical thinking, so that they don't make these mistakes.
You know, Mark, sometimes people respond better to reading and, you know, a storyline that might make things more understandable. Your new book is available on Amazon and Kindle. Talk a little bit about it just briefly.
Sure, Jeff. My book is, the title of it is Phage, P-H-A-G-E. Phage are little viruses that only attack bacteria. So in general, they're the good viruses, and they're a new tool that we have in our arsenal to try to fight some of the foodborne illnesses and some of the contamination in our food supply. And what I've tried to do in the book, sort of in the vein of Michael Crichton and how he did a great job of explaining science around an interesting story, is I bring up various types of gaps in our food supply, and I do it through a character, a microbiologist, and then the bad guys, a homegrown terrorist. But I set up these various scenarios to show people these are the problems that we have. These are the vulnerabilities. But at the same time, in my book, I'm trying to bring out the good side, and that is there are things that we can do to be able to, you know, keep our food supply as safe as possible. And in that regard, what Natasha mentioned earlier around Campylobacter, I mean, here the average person has no idea that half of the poultry, the raw poultry that we bring into our kitchens, have either Campylobacter or Salmonella on it. I mean, there's not many other products that, you know, that we would even think about bringing into our homes and exposing to our families that would be loaded with pathogens. And things like probiotics, those types of good bacteria, are well known for being able to displace, outcompete those pathogens in our gut. And so having a good gut flora is certainly another tool that we need to be using in our food safety supply system.
And food preparation is so important, and the washing, and, you know, having a separate cutting board for your poultry and having a different cutting board for your vegetables and fruits, and, you know, and the food preparation and the washing, you know, and washing your hands after, you know, handling poultry and things like this. You know, these sound like basics, but I'm sure, Mark, you'll tell you that even though they're basics, doesn't mean they're being done.
Exactly. We know that there's 50 million foodborne infections in the United States every year. 60% of those are traced back to people not washing their hands after they use the bathroom. And the causative agent is a virus called norovirus. We hear about it even this week, you know, causing cruise ship outbreaks. Mm-hmm. But that something that simple, we could remove 30 million infections if we simply had more people washing their hands. And then, you know, the other scenario that you mentioned, Jeff, is that within our homes, that cross-contamination scenario For example, I've met people that have gotten sick because they thawed their chicken in the sink, they drained it, and then they put vegetables like, you know, leafy greens to wash them in the water, and you know, never thought twice that they were actually contaminating a food that they weren't going to cook.
Mm-hmm. You know, and a lot of it is reminding, you know, and, you know, people say that the easiest things are the things most overlooked and the things most easily forgotten. And I do agree with that. You know, my grandmother used to say that. She would remind me all the time. And I used to say, Nana, I got it. And she says, but there will come a time when you'll forget it. So I'm reminding you. And it's very, very true. We do forget the basic things. And sometimes the basic things are the things that are causing the most problem. I know you'll agree, Natasha.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I've used to do some radio shows with Philip Cherno, who's written a number of books on bacterial contamination and the dangers that lurk all around us. And, you know, some interesting stats. Your iPhone has probably more bacteria than your toilet bowl. That includes your steering wheel. So what I like to do is come home and, you know, wash my hands in the back room sink or the service porch before I even go into the kitchen and make sure that I wipe down my phone if I lay it on the table or lay it anywhere, because you're bringing in a host of bacteria. And, you know, culinary schools have taken to taking infrared lights and showing people what's on their counter in their kitchen and what they're bringing into their kitchen. And I think if people did that, they would be shocked at how much bacteria they're ingesting every day. And that's why, as much as we need to know about the pathogenic bacteria that are in our food supply, we need to know about specifically which strains of probiotic bacteria we're taking in, and that we can take a measure of the dose of the probiotic bacteria we're taking in so that we know exactly what we're ingesting and how we can help, you know, maintain our optimal health and minimize our exposure to these bacteria. And I haven't even touched on the cases of MRSA that are in our community, especially in gyms and locker rooms, that can have a very deadly effect on the health of an individual. If you are infected with this organism, it can cause a immediate swelling of the area infected. And if you don't get to a hospital emergency room, it could lead to serious complications.
You know, Mark, all of this is a little scary sounding and kind of really scientific and almost like something from the future coming around, but it definitely is here, and it does come down to awareness and education. I think you'd agree.
Exactly. It all comes down to education, and unfortunately, as you said earlier, we don't think of these things, the good food safety habits, enough. And one of the reasons, I guess it's a bit fortunate, but there's the unfortunate side, and that is that we don't always show clinical symptoms. So we can do something wrong, we can eat a pathogen, you know, and something is going on inside of us, we don't feel it, but there isn't that kind of learned behavior that we made a mistake and now we need to do something differently. And as our food supply is being innovated and the way we process foods are changing, the way the loads of bacteria are changing on our foods, we're setting ourselves up for an emerging situation. So anytime we start tinkering with the food supply, we'll see a pathogen take advantage of that and appear in the population.
We have to be a little bit more focused on our health, on our cleansing techniques, how we do our food preparation, where we buy our food, how we store our food, how we prepare our food. And I think it's something that we have to be aware of. It sounds like a devastating situation, and it can be. A lot of times these are all things that can be controlled with some measures that are put in place, as well as quality probiotics in your digestive systems, by staying as healthy as you can, and by having better, you know, awareness of what's going around, where we're shopping, how we're processing our food, how we're preparing it, and how we're actually serving it at the table. This is Dr. Jeffrey Burke. This is The Power of Health on Radio MD. For more information on this and all of my segments, visit my show page at radiomd.com. I thank you for listening, and stay well.